This episode is brought to you by North Texas Honda Dealers. North Texas Honda Dealers, they're here to help.
He has time, launches it to the end zone. Touchdown, Terrence Williams!
The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught. He's the worst Red Raider!
Puts he up the 10, puts he up the right sideline!
Yeah, he's got to go, he's tackled. Sam Houston wins it. The Bearcats capture their first FCS championship.
Welcome to the Republic of Football. I am your host, Mike Craven, college football insider here at Dave Campbell's. Joined as always by producer Mal Powell. How are you doing this week, Mal Powell?
Hey, I'm doing good. Feels good to be here.
We are missing one third of our normal cast. Ishmael is out, I think, vacationing in the Midwest.
Yes.
Chicago. I don't know if I want to give his exact locations, but we are here with Greg Powers, recruiting expert for Dave Campbell's Texas Football.
Powers!
For our first section. Today we're going to talk about Arch Manning committing to Texas and what that means for the Longhorns. Obviously a lot of momentum there in Austin right now. Katie Davis back to North Texas, a huge addition. I don't even know if that's an addition, a re-addition for North Texas defensively. And then we released our all-state college teams, so we'll talk about that as well. And then we have Javi Cardenas. I've only known him for 10 years. I should be able to say his name to talk UTSA football later. So let's get going with the Arch Manning stuff. Last week, Arch Manning, obviously nephew of Peyton and Eli Manning, committed to the Longhorns. Since then, Texas has added 9 commitments, including Jonte Cook, wide receiver from DeSoto, another 5-star today. When I wrote the Big 12 recruiting story about 2 weeks ago, Texas was in the mid-20s. I think they were like 27th in the nation recruiting. The last time I looked, they were second. So, Powers, in your opinion, kind of what is Texas getting with Arch Manning, and how much does that help kind of their recruiting momentum to get kind of like that flagship guy in this class?
Well, I'm going to answer your second question first here, because since Arch Manning has committed to Texas, they've picked up 9 commitments, and it's been under a week. I think it's been just 6 days since he's made his commitment. So more than one commitment every day. Kind of cherry on top of that commitment parade was this afternoon when DCTF's number one rated wide receiver, Jonte Cook, pulled the trigger on his commitment to Texas, giving Arch Manning, you know, a key piece, I think, in the passing game. And we've all seen what Steve Sarkisian can do with a good wide receiver crop. As a matter of fact, we've seen what he can do with wide receivers who aren't that highly rated as well. You know, so he's a guy who knows how to get the receiver open and get him the football, which I think is integral in their success as they move forward. Arch is rated as the number one player in the country, the number one rated quarterback in the country. And I've been doing scouting reports and for over 20 years, 15 of those 20 years, I was responsible for rating players, you know, across the country, looking at players from other states, covering all of the big events, the opening Under Armour All-America game, U.S. Army All-American Bowl, now just the All-American Bowl. So I've seen a lot of top talent in my heyday scouting top recruits, right? So Arch is a guy who I think has the pedigree. You have to understand how to be a great college player to be any good at all, right? That's check that first box, yeah. Right? He's going to have the people in his corner to help coach him up, and he knows probably what it takes to be a good quarterback. Secondly, I feel like he's done a pretty good job of handling the fame of being the number one rated recruit. He's not a guy who's out there clamoring for attention, or really, I would say in some ways that he shies away from some of it, but I don't see it as a negative thing. Like, you have to worry about, is he assertive enough to be the leader? He's a leader. You know, I don't think that there's anything that you have to worry about, like, is he too meek or meager?
And a lot of those kids, when they're young and in high school and going through this recruiting process, they almost need that attention to build up their profile, right?
Right.
Get their brand going. Now in the NIL world, you know, as we saw with Arch's commitment tweet, he doesn't need to do any of that. He's already a Manning. I think it was the most liked commitment tweet of all time or something, according to some people. So he doesn't need to kind of go out and get that attention. He already has the last name. I agree with you. Like, the fact that Peyton and Eli have been there, done that, can only help him. You know, like, any question he has, any bit of adversity he goes against, he can just call one of the best quarterbacks of all time, and Peyton Manning, a two-time Super Bowl champion, and Eli Manning. And so a lot of good in his corner. You know, I don't know if I'm convinced that Arch Manning is Vince Young or Quinn Ewers. And those are the only two guys that have ever been rated as high as he is.
Right.
But I do think the benefit of having a Manning committed to your program is almost immeasurable, right? Because Steve Sarkisian, coming off of 5-7 season, can go to every recruit now and go, the Manning family trusts me with their next jewel, right? Like, Arch is up next in this family that's seen everything and knows basically every person in college football, and they chose me, Steve Sarkisian. I think that's more valuable than him as a quarterback. And then the next note is, I've seen a lot of people with the Quinn Ewers thing, like, oh, is Quinn gonna transfer? How is that gonna work? I think it's set up perfectly, right? Like, Quinn Ewers gets to be the quarterback for the next 2 years. Arch Manning comes in 2023, washes for a year, and then he gets to be the quarterback for 2 years. If you're Steve Sarkisian, I don't know how this offseason could go any better.
Yeah,
I agree. And you know, the different recruiting services rate players for different reasons, highly,
sure.
Right? At 24/7 Sports, we rated players there based upon their NFL potential.
Mm-hmm.
Your number one player in the country, you felt like he could be the number one pick in the NFL draft. Here at DCTF, I have more of a focus on, I think, college production over. And you always want to rate to some sort of NFL hype, right?
Sure.
But I look at a guy as, what could his college potential be? Can
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Can he lead a team to a national championship? Can he be a All-American? Is he going to be All-Conference? Those are the things I look for when I kind of pick and choose the top 50, which are the four-star guys. And then when the top five comes, you factor in a little bit more. Are they a national name? Like Garrett Wilson, number one rated player in the state, because I thought he could go off to college and be in the Heisman race, right? That's what I was thinking there. And you can rate some guys on upside. I think Arch Manning, 6'4", 215 pounds, showcases a plus arm, over 65% accuracy on a three-year high school career. He's going to be a four-year starter. There are a lot of boxes to check there. I'm a bit of a Texas high school football snob.
Yeah.
Admittedly now.
Right.
You know, we're blessed here to see great players in great programs playing for great coaching staffs.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what concerns me a little bit as I look at Arch, if anything, is what type of competition does he play week in and week out, and does that translate exactly as what we would think is like a top-rated Texas high school football talent? But you know what? Louisiana produces a lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
They do. You're right.
Of great stars, not only for college football, but there are a lot of great players playing in the NFL. So that's just like a very small critique. If you want to critique getting the number one player in the country, right?
Right. Yeah, I do think it's an important point, right? He doesn't play 6A Texas football. You know, like we saw Quinn Ewers play against Westlake's defense. Like we saw Vince Young make a really long run in the high school playoffs. Like we've never seen Arch not be the best player on the field. Like he's far and away the best player on every field he gets to. But if Ewers is what everybody thinks that Ewers is, he's going to have a year to kind of figure that out and catch up, and he won't have to just be like the savior right away. And I think that's important for Sark. Before we let you go, what do you think Texas is getting in Jonte Cook? I know you're really high on him.
Yeah.
I've kind of been out of the recruiting game for a little while now, so I don't follow it as closely. Like, he's a five-star guy out of DeSoto. What does he bring to the Longhorns?
My comparison for him, and I just made it, we did like a recruiting recap of the Texas 7-on-7. I didn't know that Jonte Cook was going to pull the trigger on his commitment today to Texas. But the guy who I compare him to is Hollywood Brown.
Mm.
I think that that's a pretty solid comparison. I think Jonte is a guy who probably fits most naturally in as a slot wide receiver at the next level. 6 foot, 5'11", 6 foot, 170-ish pounds. Very quick off the line, very fluid, great feet. Catches the ball very naturally. I think that he is a guy who operates better in space, but I think he can go outside and provide some burst up the sideline or make some plays deep down the field. Now, I think Hollywood is like a true outside receiver. He's not your typical outside receiver, so I think Jonte Cook fits in that mold as a guy who might fit in best as a slot wide receiver in college, but can flip out and do some things on the outside as well to add some versatility to the offense. He's the number one rated wide receiver in the DCTF rankings this year, which kind of tells you a lot because we produce a lot of really good wide receivers. This is a huge pickup. I think that he's the type of guy who will be ringleader for the class. I think that he'll work the phones. He'll work social media, try to get other guys to join the club. Mm-hmm. He wants to win a national championship. And I find it interesting that I spoke with him following the state 7-on-7. And he's into Arch Manning going to be on the team. He's into Quinn Ewers being on the team. But he realizes that for him, a good quarterback is like a bonus to what he was looking for. I think he had a great quote when he says, Steve Sarkisian can get a 5-0 flat wide receiver open in his offense. Right. And I think that's the reason why he picked Texas. And Arch Manning, Quinn Ewers, they're just like a cherry on top of kind of everything that culminated in his recruitment.
I feel like this week has validated Texas's hiring of Steve Sarkisian. Right? Like, this was the plan. I know 5-7 wasn't the plan. Losing second-half leads wasn't the plan. But the idea of bringing in this offensive guru that everybody respects, from old guys like Peyton Manning to young guys like Jonte Cook, recognize that Steve Sarkisian is this offensive genius. Coming off of a 5-7 season to be able to do this is impressive.
It's wild.
Imagine if they win 10 games, like what the momentum can be like at Texas.
I love what you said.
A&M's class.
He's bought it. He bought more years. You know, he's bought extra time there because you're definitely going to not put a lot of pressure on the job there till you can see what Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning.
Because I thought this year was going to be interesting for Steve Sarkisian, right? Like, he went 5-7 year one. We know Texas fans don't have a lot of patience. Let's say they get beat by 40 by Alabama and go 7-5 this year. Well, that hot seat ratchets it up. Mm-hmm. But now with Arch and this recruiting class coming on, I think Tepper mentioned it's kind of like A&M, where Jimbo Fisher went 8-4 last year. It was a bad year. That was with a win over Alabama. But nobody's talking about Jimbo Fisher being on the hot seat.
No.
Because look at all the momentum he has in recruiting. Tom Herman was fired in some part because of his personality, but a large part because he couldn't get Quinn Ewers. He couldn't get the Brockermeyer twins. Garrett Wilson goes to Ohio State. He got fired after 7-3. I would say Texas fans are more excited right now after a 5-7 season because at least they can see that the head coach is bringing in that talent.
Well, just in college football in general, you're going to see more guys get whacked after 2 years.
Yeah,
this is coming, folks. Like, there is no comfortability now as a college football head coach. The NIL, transfer portal, all that stuff has changed college football in such a way that you have to win now.
Right.
And if you're at a program that has money and can afford to, for lack of a better term, buy players,
right,
you can't afford to sit back and rack up L's, you know, unless there's like a pathway to success or some, you know, things like Arch Manning in your future.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's a win now game, and a 5-7 year again this year, I think, would have forecasted doom there. But even with a 5-7 year now, I don't think that you can talk, hey, Coach Sark is in trouble at Texas. And I don't know what
unless Arch decommits.
I'm not a college football expert. I love to watch college football, don't get me wrong, but I don't know, like, is their schedule played out favorably where that's not an option? Are they going to go 5-7? That's where I defer to you. How does that schedule kind of shape up this season?
I mean, it's a tough schedule with Alabama being at home and just not knowing what Texas is. I think their problems are defensively, and that's where they're going to have to figure this stuff out. Like, I believe Sark's going to always have an offense, kind of like what Cook said. He can make a 5.0 wide receiver open, right? So they're going to score points. It's going to be about defense, and to me, Texas's landing point is 2024. That's where we're all hearing that the SEC entrance is going to happen. That roster needs to be ready by 2024. Stack. Having Arch on deck kind of shows that momentum going that way. And Sark, no matter what the record is this year, he can kind of point to the future and go, look, I'm still dealing with guys that I inherited. Look at the guys I'm bringing, even with these records. Once we get this rolling and we're in the SEC, we're going to be all the way up. Because as much as we've kind of given Sark the props for getting Arch, Arch isn't coming if Texas isn't going to the SEC.
Right.
The fact that Texas is going to the SEC coupled with Sarkisian's offensive acumen, I think, makes them a destination spot. We'll see if defensively can catch up with the offensive.
I think Texas is recruiting strongly to the SEC. Looking at the offensive line recruits that they just brought in, they picked up 4 O-line commits in that group of 9 that we kind of talked about off the top. Andre Kojo, 6'6", 345, or 330 pounds. Connor Stroh, 6'7", 345, 350 pounds.
They're getting big.
You know what I mean? Like, they're going for the hog mollies up front that can, you know, lay the groundwork to open up holes when they move to the SEC. Mm-hmm. These are the type of guys they are recruiting. And I like what they've done in recruiting. Last year's class was really good. They've sandwiched that into what could be in the race to be the number one overall class in the country this year. They have talent at Texas. It's going to be on the roster, especially by the year 2023.
Yep. They just need that defensive line. If they need a defensive line class, kind of like how A&M had last year, where there's this like multiple impact guys in that. It's going to be fun, right? If like Texas follows Texas A&M's class, like if they go back to back number one classes, like it's a good sign for college football in the state of Texas, and it's exciting to see.
It is funny to see how they do it different, though.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean? Like you hit the nail right on the head. Texas A&M went heavy on the defensive front, had a lot of success there. Whereas I feel Texas has really done a great job, quarterbacks, wide receiver, running back.
Yep.
And that'll be interesting to see how that plays out, too.
All righty, sir. We appreciate it. We will now talk about KD Davis coming back to North Texas, a big college news there. Like KD Davis, for those who don't know, leading tackler at North Texas in the magazine. Go subscribe and get one of
good
these.
Good promo. Good
get
promo.
One of these beautiful things. In the magazine, we have KD Davis listed as the best linebacker.
Yep.
He's a first-team All-State guy, and he was the player profile for North Texas' section. So I thank KD Davis personally for saving some of the college football magazine information stuff. But a big deal for North Texas, for those who don't know, he entered the transfer portal about a week and a half ago, went on a visit to A&M, was also getting a lot of interest from Ole Miss, decided to come back to North Texas. It's a big boost for Phil Bennett in that defense. He's only 97 tackles away from being the all-time leading tackler in North Texas history. So after losing the Murphy twins on defensive line to UCLA in the transfer portal, they could not lose KD Davis. I think this was a sigh of relief, right?
I was going to say, if you're a North Texas fan, you can kind of breathe a little bit better now knowing that your defense is probably going to still be okay even though they lost the Murphy twins.
Yeah.
But I think that North Texas was kind of in panic mode, to say the least, because, I mean, if you're losing three of your stars on defense – you're kind of hitting panic mode at that point, you know?
Well, and it says something about the program, right? If all your best players are jumping out into this transfer portal and leaving, especially late into the summer, you know, that speaks volumes, right? So for Latrell, Phil Bennett, to get him back on campus is big.
Huge
win. Find this interesting, right? Like, I think we're going to see this more and more, where guys go test the waters. Like,
yes.
To go see what's out there, whether it be money, whether it be playing time, whether it be a bigger platform. And this is just my uninformed opinion. But I believe that KD Davis kind of went to Ole Miss, went to Texas A&M, and realized, okay, I'm going to be a guy on this defense. If I'm at North Texas, I am the guy. And if I have a senior season in the same way I had a junior season, I'm going to leave North Texas as one of the top five players ever in this program. I'm going to be in the Hall of Honor. I'm going to be a legend.
Right.
And so he came back, and which brings up, I think, an interesting question. You know, if you're going through recruiting, if you're one of these guys, do you want to be kind of like top dog at a place like North Texas or, you know, a guy at a place like A&M?
I can tell you 100% in confidence that I would much rather be the guy at a program like North Texas than just the second string linebacker that may get in at A&M when they play Louisiana or something, you know, when they're blowing them out. Just because, like you, I think we talked about this earlier, North Texas, you're going to get into the Hall of Fame. KD Davis is probably going to get into the North Texas Hall of Fame. His name is going to be somewhere in that stadium. You know, you can't really say that confidently if he transfers to A&M and he's just the backup, right? So why not just be the guy at North Texas, and then your legacy kind of just lives on there? You know, like Mean Joe Green.
Yep.
People are still talking about him. That was years ago. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would kind of be the same way. I mean, it's one of the reasons I took this job, right? You know, like I've always kind of liked being like, you know, like the guy on my own kind of doing it, you know, doing the thing. Like, you know, at the Statesman, I was like the recruiting writer. Here I get to be the college writer, and everybody else is kind of dealing with high school stuff. So I definitely enjoy that platform. And maybe if I was a freshman or sophomore, I'd take that chance to go to A&M or Ole Miss. And I have
a
couple years
point.
To work into the starting lineup and play major football and then maybe, you know, get more looks into the NFL draft. I think nowadays you can get seen anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you have an awesome year and you ball out at North Texas, that's not going to stop you from getting drafted. But also, he only has 1 year left.
For
so if you show up to A&M in August it's going to be really hard to work yourself into, like, the starting lineup, right?
Right.
At North Texas, you're the dude. Like, you are the dude. So good on North Texas as a you know, place that covers all 12 FBS programs. Like, we root for them all to be really good. This helps North Texas a lot. I would have been concerned with kind of the momentum and feeling within that program if a guy like KD Davis leaves at the end of June.
I think that's too.
It's just not a good sign.
Right.
So speaking of KD Davis, he's on our All Texas college football teams. We're going to get the first team up there here in a second. Let me just go through the superlatives as well. So not only do we do a first team and a second team, but we also pick a best of at each position.
Yes.
Best quarterback, we picked Clayton Toon from Houston. Best running back, Bijan Robinson from Texas. Best receiver, Nathaniel Dell from Houston. Best offensive lineman, Connor Galvin from Baylor. Best defensive lineman, Siaka Ika. Defensive tackle from Baylor, you know, two Baylor Bears there as offensive lineman, defensive lineman. That's a good sign for them.
Not a surprise.
Yeah, not a surprise, but a really good sign for Baylor and what they're doing moving forward. KD Davis, as we mentioned, best linebacker there at North Texas. Antonio Johnson, best defensive back from Texas A&M. And then Austin McNamara got best special teams. He's an incredible punter out at Texas Tech. So those were kind of the big names there on that first team all-state list. If you look at the whole list, Texas A&M for the second straight year kind of led the way. Last year they led with 10 players, this year with 8. I think 5 on the first team. Bryce Foster, Antonio Johnson, as we mentioned, Edrian Cooper, a linebacker that I think is going to have a huge sophomore year. Antonio Johnson, we mentioned. Anaya Smith, I think, is the name that I forgot there, utility guy who plays wide receiver. We'll play a little bit more running back this year as well without Isaiah Spiller. So A&M, still the most talented team in the state. Number two, we have Houston. Houston has 6 players on the all-college team, so that kind of shows kind of the expectations there at Houston. And then, again, as we mentioned, we're having Javi Cardenas on later on the show to talk UTSA. UTSA was 3rd on that list with 5, and I promise that wasn't a homerish,
homer
thing I did.
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot Ish's bit there. You want to throw up second team?
Yeah, second team.
There it is.
So some more Aggies, some more, you know, so we got every single team is represented. Mm-hmm. All 12 FBS teams are represented. And then I think a thing that Shahan did last year that I really liked was he found a spot for an FCS player. Last year it was Eric Schmid from Sam Houston, the quarterback, after leading them to a national title. I think that was deserving. And I love the idea to, like, who is the best FCS player? Let's find him a spot. To me, the best FCS player in state this year is Xavier Gibson, wide receiver at Stephen F. Austin. You know, he finished 7th last year in the Walter Payton Award voting. And for those who don't know, that's kind of like the Heisman of FCS. So I think big year coming from SFA. And I'm glad that he was able to find a spot on the list because wide receiver's tough.
Yeah.
As Powers was talking about, you know, that recruiting trickles up, right? And, like, wide receiver is probably the most loaded position in this state. So finding him a spot was great.
Yeah. Now, before we move on from talking about the All Texas College, I got a couple questions for you that I wanted to ask. Who do you think was the toughest decision to put on the first team?
Yeah, so for me, the toughest spot was quarterback. Because in my mind, there are 3 really, really, really good quarterbacks in this state this year going into the year that deserve this kind of recognition. You have Clayton Toon at Houston, Tanner Mordecai at SMU who got second team, and then there's Frank Harris at UTSA, who led UTSA to their first conference championship, who was a big-time money player for them last year. We named him our offensive player of the year last year, and he's not even on one of the first 2 teams. So, and being a UTSA guy, I knew I was going
to
get some flack for that one. But, you know, when all 3 are kind of equal, to me, all you can do is go by numbers and statistics. And,
right.
You know, Clayton Toon threw 36 touchdowns. Tanner Mordecai threw for 4,000 plus yards, you know. So those guys' stats were just bigger and bigger. Some of that is the offense they play in. You know, Tanner Mordecai played for Sonny Dykes, an air raid spread, pass the ball around guy. Clayton Toon plays for Dana Holgerson, an air raid spread the ball around, pass. You know, Frank Harris had Sincere McCormick, and UTSA is a little bit more run pass even there. So I don't think he's able to put the numbers up. But I believe if there's a guy I look back on later in the year, I'm like, I messed that one up. It would be Frank Harris. I wish we could have had 3 spots for quarterback.
Right. And kind of speaking of that, what was the easiest position to kind of figure out to put on the first, I guess, and second team?
Yeah, I mean, I think the easiest position was probably wide receiver because there's just so many options. Like we mentioned, you know, like Zachary Franklin at UTSA, Xavier Worthy at Texas, Tank Dell at Houston. And I haven't even mentioned Quentin Johnston at TCU, who's a first-team All-Big 12 guy, right? So wide receiver was a position where there was almost too many options. The easiest singular decision was Bijan Robinson.
For sure.
Right? Like,
for sure.
It was like, just pencil that one in. Probably running back on first team, like Bijan Robinson, Devon Achane, clearing away the top two guys. So running back on the first team was pretty easy, and then finding 6-7 wide receivers was pretty easy as well. And that's why both utility guys are wide receivers. And Nia Smith and Xavier Gibson, wide receivers. So really, we got eight All-State wide receivers on the list.
And you kind of already mentioned this, but what was like the biggest omission for you? Was it Frank Harris at that quarterback spot?
I think with Frank Harris, I have an excuse.
Yeah.
You know, there's like, hey, you know, like, look at these other two guys. Like, they were just as deserving. Like, who do I leave off? You know, like, I was going to get flagged. I think the guy that I maybe undersell a little bit, that the more and more time went on, is Layden Robinson, the guard at Texas A&M. People are getting really high on him. He's starting to get a big push into being preseason All-SEC. People are talking about him being a first, second, third round draft pick next year. So I think if there's a guy who I look back on at the end of the year, and I'm like, how did I not put him on the list? To me, that's going to be Layden Robinson at Texas A&M. But there was already, you know, with Bryce Foster, Ruben Fothery, there's already two Texas A&M guys on there.
Yeah.
And I think a thing about our list that makes it unique is we're not just picking the flat-out best players. This is not an NFL draft.
Right.
Right? Like, we have 12 FBS programs to cover. We want
to
spread that around.
Exactly.
You know,
that's what people don't understand.
When you're judging a UTEP defensive end versus a Texas A&M defensive end, of course the Texas A&M one probably is higher level talent, but which one's better for their conference?
Like, exactly.
Group to group, right? It's like looking at 2A versus 6A. Maybe the 2A quarterback isn't as good as the 6A quarterback, but he dominates 2A more so than that quarterback dominates 6A.
Yeah.
So it's taking those things into account, not trying to over – you know, hype one team into the other. Texas A&M coming off an 8-4 season. I don't know who their quarterback is going to be. I don't think that they're a top 10 team in the country. I didn't want to have it too Aggie-centric.
Hot take.
I think Layden Robinson's probably the best player that was left off that list.
Yeah, I like that. Now I'm going to put you kind of on the spot here. If you are looking into the future, so this would be this. So this is kind of the 2021 All-Texas College team, right? If you're looking at the 2022 All-Texas College team, you're talking to Mike in about a year, who can you see on that list? And you don't have to name every single person, but like, who are a couple of players you're going to watch out for to put on that list this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the guy who's going to be on it next year who wasn't on it this year is Alton McCaskill.
That's a great
The running back from Houston.
Great idea.
You know, because, I mean, he was on the list. Like, I'll be out front with everybody. I made this in like late April. You know, and like, we didn't go to press until June. And so I was able to kind of go back and tweak it a little bit after talking to more people. But what happened in between Alton McCaskill getting put on the original list and the magazine going out is he tore his ACL.
Right.
And so can you put a guy on the list if he's going to miss 8, 9, 10, 11, maybe the whole season? I don't know. I could. I didn't think I should. Right.
Yeah.
But when he gets back and Bijan Robinson's gone, Devon Achane is gone, Alton McCaskill is going to be the best
running
back
in
the state. He's the most talented running back in the state, you know, after those guys. And so I think he's a guy who, just looking at the list, is like, okay, he deserves to be on it, but circumstance kept him off.
For sure. Like it.
All righty. And we're going to transfer into our interview with Javi Cardenas from birdsup.com. Before we do that, though, while we get him on the phone, just want to remind everybody that this is the Republic of Football. We're normally a podcast. This is our second live stream. We're going to continue to do this throughout the summer and into the football season. We hope it's been exciting for you. It's been a lot of fun for us, even if it's nerve-wracking. I get a little nervous with the camera out there. I went into writing for a reason, so being on camera is a little nerve-wracking. But, yeah, be sure to check us out. Find us on YouTube, on Spotify, you know, on iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts and live video. Please give us a shout out. It makes us look good for our bosses, and we all enjoy that. So, also, before we get going on the interview, we got Jeff Traylor, Joey McGuire on the cover, Texas Tech UTSA head coaches. Kind of the story is more about, you know, high school coaches kind of infiltrating the college ranks. So please check that out. If you want it early, you got to subscribe. If you subscribe, you're going to get it before it gets to newsstands. So if you're listening to this and you want the magazine, please go subscribe.
I've had so many people ask me, like, hey, when can I get the magazine on stands? And I'm like, you're looking at like beginning of August, mid-August.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
we're dealing
here's
with
how
the
you,
same.
Here's how you deal with that. You subscribe.
We're dealing
get
with the
now.
Same issues as the rest
exactly.
of the country, right?
Exactly.
Like, you know, paper is the same as baby formula and all the other things that are having
right.
a hard time getting everywhere. So it's going to be later this year than normal. But if you're a subscriber, you already have it, right?
Yep.
Like my parents got it. You know, so like I know if you're a subscriber, you already have it. So please go subscribe. And not only do you get the magazine, but we do a lot of stuff online, you know, that we used to not do as much online 5-10 years ago. Dave Campbell's isn't just a magazine company anymore. So subscribe and get all the content. I think we do a great
podcasts.
Job from the high school to the college level and in between recruiting with Greg Powers. He does a tremendous job. So I think there's a lot of benefits to subscribe.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Let's hit it.
Javi.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. For those who don't know, I have known Javi Cardenas for, I mean, how long now? Over a decade?
Oh, man, I was actually looking into that. Yeah, close to it, I think.
So Javi runs birdsup.com. I used to run birdsup.com. gave it to Javi, sweat equity, you know. He was a good soldier. And he's made the site, I'm not just saying this because he's on the line, he's made the site way better than it ever was. when I ran it. So go subscribe to birdsup.com. It's part of the Rivals Network, and they do a tremendous job covering UTSA football and recruiting. Javi, thanks for joining us today.
Of course, guys. Thanks for having me.
You know, I wanted to ask you before we get into, like, the football stuff, as somebody who went to UTSA, who's kind of been around, you know, since this program started, you know, a decade plus ago now, how different is the energy and just the excitement and optimism around Roadrunner football compared to maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago?
I mean, it's really a world of difference, you know. I mean, I think the fans have always been excited ever since the football program started, as you know, and that excitement was always there, and then it kind of trailed off a little bit, right, as they struggled a little bit. But now, these last couple of years, man, it's really eye-opening around the city, obviously, you know, around campus when you head down there. Everyone's excited. Everybody's wearing the Roadrunner gear around town. They've really embraced the team. Jeff Traylor has really, you know, harped on the whole, you know, your town, your team kind of mentality, and the city has kind of backed them up on that. It was pretty amazing, you know, last year as the season got going, attendance was kind of, you know, a little average, but you saw it incrementally go up as they kept winning games, right? And they kept winning and they kept winning. And then by the end of the championship game, you saw 40,000 plus at the Alamo Dome, which is something you haven't seen since the Coker years, right, when the team was first started. So it's really been incredible to see.
Yeah, I mean, when I was on campus, you know, I'm older than Javi, and we didn't have football yet. You know, we had the UTSA still undefeated in football shirts going around back then. But when you would go to class, you were more likely to see somebody in a Texas Longhorn shirt or a Texas A&M Aggie shirt or Texas Tech, you know, like whatever they grew up rooting for. And going around campus now when I'm there to cover practice or go talk to Coach Traylor, it really is amazing to see the school spirit and how much that's grown. I think it shows why UTSA wanted to start a football program. Lynn Hickey, the former athletic director, used to always talk about football as like the neon sign outside of a business. You know, it gets you in there, it gets you paying attention. And so, you know, my next question is that success that's starting to happen over the last 2 years, can you feel it on the recruiting trail and in a perception, not only around campus and in the city, but from high school prospects and from players across the state who, you know, Coach Traylor's trying to get to UTSA?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think definitely you've seen a difference in the way they're recruiting. It's a different level of athlete that they've been recruiting. And we actually made a comment to a couple of my friends that follow the program that the recruits that, you know, that usually in the summer they start posting their workout pictures, right? Like, them are on campus. And we made a comment like, hey, man, like these guys didn't used to look like this when we were covering the program, you know, gosh, like 5-6 years ago. And that's really the difference between, you know, a 2-star or a 3-star recruit, or, you know, when they first started the program, it was guys that didn't really have a lot of scholarship offers. Well, now, you know, it's guys that have Power 5 offers that could have chosen to go to bigger programs, and you see them hitting campus and you see the difference physically, right? Which we could argue is, you know, the big difference between a 2-star or a 3-star prospect is just how imposing they look when they hit campus. So yeah, it's been a world difference, you know, with the new facilities. Obviously winning always helps, but with the new facilities, it's just been a world of difference how they're recruiting right now. They have the number one class in Conference USA. They're off to a great start there, and I don't see why that wouldn't continue as they as they go into the American. Obviously, they're going to need a higher level of talent to compete there. And I think they've done a great job of kind of being in that direction, you know, to competing with the SMUs and the Memphis of the conference.
I think it really dawned on me when UTEP and UTSA played last year in UTEP. I had spent the two or three previous days up there doing UTEP stuff. And then when UTSA got in town, Coach Traylor kind of let me come to the hotel the morning of the game and do a story on, you know, how you prep for a road game. And after being around the UTEP players and then going around the UTSA players, there was like a noticeable difference of like the size and strength of those guys. And then we saw that on the field. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Like that, the program doesn't look the same anymore, right? We used to look at guys and, you know, they were FCS-type players who were playing a little bit up, and now they're bona fide FBS dudes who are all around. Speaking of a few of those guys, you know, I think the big question mark for UTSA this year is going to be how they replace Sincere McCormick. As somebody who's around the program, who knows who they brought in, who they still have there, kind of how do you see UTSA replacing that production? Because it's clearly not going to be just one guy, obviously. But how do they go about kind of remaining a run-first team that really threatens teams that way?
Yeah, and, you know, Jeff Traylor has always said that they're going to be a run-based offense, right? They're going to be multiple. They're going to spread it out a little bit. But at the end of the day, they're still going to be, you know, heavy on the run. Losing Sincere is obviously a big loss. But I think they've done a good job in replacing, at least attempting to replace his production, bringing in, you know, a JUCO All-American and Ty Edwards, and then the Arkansas TCU transfer, Traylon Smith as well. I think he's probably the biggest addition of the summer. He just gives you another safety blanket there, right? And then you also have Brendan Brady, who decided to come back for his, I guess we can call it his super senior year. So, you know, you're replacing McCormick with three very capable guys. I'm sure it's still going to be tough. I'm sure it's not going to be the same, right? Because they're three different styles of running backs. Sincere obviously works the workhorse, right? It's a guy that I remember against Memphis, they give him the ball 36, 40 times, and he got those yards, and you know, he was able to be trusted. Now it's going to be a little bit different, right? There's going to be two to three guys that you're going to have to lean on for that production. So can they do that is really the biggest question mark. Luckily for them, they have an experienced offensive line. Obviously, Frank Harris comes back, a guy that can extend his plays with his feet, right? So that's always a good safety blanket to have. And then obviously you have the receiving corps that are, you know, some of the best in the conference, maybe even the country, right? With Franklin, Cephas, and Clark. So the weapons are there, right? But obviously they are missing the biggest piece. Can they at least try to duplicate that is the biggest question mark for that offense.
Yeah, it leads me perfectly into my next question. I mean, I think I could make an argument that UTSA has the best trio of receivers at the G5 level. Do you think we see Frank Harris become a 30-plus attempt a game guy just because of how much they trust him? Will Stein, a former quarterback, kind of moving into the OC role, Sincere not being there, and then those receivers that we mentioned, you know, would it be beneficial for this team to throw the ball a little bit more than maybe Joey McGuire's used to throwing it, just to kind of utilize the talent that they have on campus?
I think they're going to have to. You know, with Sincere gone, there's going to be an adjustment period. They're not going to be able to hand it off as much as they did in the last couple of years. So they're, you know, against Houston, against Texas, against Army, you know, those early games, they're going to have to throw the ball a lot until they can really get a sense of what their running game looks like. It's been mentioned a couple times that, you know, their record is probably not going to duplicate what it was last year, right? Everything kind of lined up perfectly for them last year. So I think there's going to be some bumps and bruises with the offense, obviously, you know, trying to figure it out. But I think they're going to have to rely heavily on Harris and their receivers to kind of get them through that awkward phase as they figure it out as they head into conference play.
Yeah, I mean, I think I could make an argument that UTSA could be a better football team this year and have a much worse record just because of how hard the schedule is this year compared to last year. You know, we talk a lot about the offense because it's kind of the sexy position, and Sincere McCormick was so good as a two-time conference all-conference USA, you know, player on offense. But for me, when I look at UTSA, I think my main questions are on defense. What do you see about that defense? What do you think that they're going to be this year compared to maybe in the years past?
I agree 100%. I mean, everybody likes to talk about the offense, right? Because it's really what a lot of people focus on. But it's the defense that UTSA has a little bit more questions on. The defensive line, they lost some talent. They lost some talent in the secondary with Tyreek Woolen. So it's going to be a little different. You know, it's how do they replace some of those veteran guys, those super senior guys that they've kind of leaned on, right? A guy like Jalen Haynes, a guy like Adansler, right? Guys that have been with the program for quite a bit and won a lot of games. So it's going to be interesting to see how the defensive line shaken up. You know, some of those younger guys that they were been sitting in the wings, it's time for them to step up a little bit, right? So how does that work? At linebacker, you see guys like Ligon, right? Can he take the leadership role? Can Trevor Hermanson, you know, come back for a super senior year and provide that leadership? Can Wisdom continue to be that leader in the defense? They brought in Saf Frazier, a four-star JUCO corner. Nick Fortune, that a transfer from West Virginia to kind of shore up the cornerback spot. So there's a lot of unknowns. It's a lot of talent, obviously, but guys that we don't know much about. So how is that going to translate, right? It's like, again, it goes into that adjustment period and the beginning of the season, and it might not be, you know, as smooth as it was last year because there's just that familiarity. Maybe by the time conference play, they'll finally reach, you know, where they want to be. But it's definitely going to, the beginning of the year is going to be interesting just to see how these guys kind of step into their new roles.
Yeah, I honestly think it almost is beneficial that Jeff Traylor was a high school coach because he needs to treat this year like non-district and district, where it's like that out-of-conference schedule, like, yeah, it'll be fun to win a few games, but it really doesn't matter. We just need to be who we need to be by conference play. Before I let you go, just to put you on the spot, you know, UTSA starts with Houston, Texas, and Army. What do you think their record is after those three games?
Oh, man. I mean, the optimist in me says 1-3, but, at least get one win out of those three. But, I mean, there's a good chance that it could be winless there. And like you said, it might not be reflective of how good this team is and just kind of reflective of how good that out of conference schedule is. But if I had to say right now, I think they get one game out of those three. I'm not going to say which one, but I think they get at least one of those three.
And then if I set the over and under at 9, you going over or under in terms of just total wins on the year?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with under. Or you know what? I'll go with the push. Nine.
Well, that's why I said it at 9.
Yeah. I want to, can you set it at 8.5? Now, I'll go with 8. I think 8 seems like a good number. It's not going to be as good as last year, like we mentioned. I think 8's a good solid number for this team. It's a number that gets you to the conference championship game, I think, at the end of the year. And it's something that, you know, fans should be happy with when it's all said and done.
All righty, sir. I appreciate the time as always, and I will be there for Houston UTSA. I've already told Kyle Stevens at UTSA that I need my spot reserved, so look forward to week 1.
Aaron, and see you there.
Later. That was Javi Cardenas from birdsup.com. Please go subscribe. I think I still get royalties.
You have to.
I know
I feel
for
like
a fact.
You should.
I know for a fact I still pay for the GoDaddy renewal. That's one of the best things about having me as a friend is I'm lazy, right? So like if it's just like about an auto renewal going through on my card or me calling you to figure that out, I'm just going to
let it go. You're just
going to let it
go.
I'm just gonna let it
You're
renew.
Just going to let so it go.
Javi's,
hear that, everybody.
Javi's been running birdsup.com for free for years now. So
yeah, that's,
you know,
awesome. I love that.
Yeah. He was great. He was a college student when I took over, like mm-hmm. When I made that site. And he started as like the baseball writer. And I think he would even admit, I would have to go back and like edit all of this stuff.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like go, you know, and he's like grown into a really good writer. And I really do think that site is leaps and bounds better than it was when I was running it. I was not made to be a message board guy.
Yeah.
I'm a journalist. I write a story, I put it out there, and then I want to move on to the next thing. I don't want to have a conversation for 24 hours about anything, honestly.
You'd rather write about it on paper rather than just having a little message board conversation or even with somebody in person.
And you got to deal with the customers and all that kind of stuff.
You don't wanna,
it's like a business, you know, and I just don't have the personality to that. So if you're a UTSA fan or you're somebody who's like getting into UTSA football, starting really paying attention in the city, I cannot recommend birdsup.com enough, not only for the information, but just from the community. They put on tailgates and all that kind of stuff. So it's a fun thing to get to.
For sure.
All righty, let's finish up this with a few UTSA questions.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and ask one of the obvious ones first. Who do you think the bigger loss is, running back Sincere McCormick or linebacker Clarence Hicks?
I think I'm going to surprise people. I think it's Clarence Hicks for the reasons that Javi and I were kind of talking about, right?
Like, for sure.
I'm a believer that your run game has as much to do, if not more to do, with your offensive line than your running back. Mm-hmm. Sincere McCormick behind a bad offensive line is not as good as a average running back behind a really good offensive line. Like, give me average running back, awesome offensive line over a great running back, average offensive line. So I think the running game is going to be fine. Frank Harris can run. He, you know, that passing game is going to be really, really good. So I think offensive-wise, it's going to be fine.
Right.
What they're missing, though, is that pass rush. And Clarence Hicks, with 10.5 sacks last year, set a record, probably should have been the Conference USA Defensive Player of the Year. I think they just didn't want to give everything to UTSA, and so he didn't get that one. But I think they don't have a surefire like that dude's coming off the edge, and that's what Clarence Hicks provided UTSA. I think finding that pass rush threat is going to be the biggest question mark for the Roadrunners going into the season.
Well, and you heard Javi too. He said that Jeff Traylor's always going to be in that run-based offense mindset. So they're always going to have those backup running backs, those backup tight ends that can fulfill that running game pretty easily. But you're not always going to have those defensive guys, those linebackers that can take a place of Clarence Hicks.
You can scheme your running game.
Yes.
Right? You can come up with interesting and creative ways for your running games to work. On defense, it's more about just being a dude.
Right.
Right? You can either get to the quarterback or you can't. And Clarence Hicks in 2020 couldn't. He had a lot of pressures, but he didn't get a single sack.
Right.
And over that offseason, he became a pass rushing specialist that could finish, you know, at the quarterback. And maybe UTSA has a guy or two that's making that exact same transition right now behind the scenes, but we haven't seen it yet until the Roadrunners can prove, like, hey, this guy can get after the passer. I think Clarence Hicks is the biggest loss from that team last year.
For sure. Let's go with, is UTSA the favorite to win Conference USA? They won the regular season and they won the Conference USA championship last year. So are they the favorites to repeat? Maybe just regular season, maybe championship game. What are your thoughts?
I think, like Javi, it's getting out of that out of conference schedule unscathed, right? Like, I don't care so much about the record. I want to know about the health.
Right.
Right? Like, does UTSA get out of those three games as the same Roadrunner team that we're looking at on paper? Because if they are healthy and Frank Harris is healthy, those wide receivers are healthy, and the defense comes around, on paper, the only team that could compete with them for conference championship is UAB.
Yep.
You know, Western Kentucky is going to take a step back this year with Bailey Zappe, Jarris Stearns being gone. So I see this as a two-team race between UAB and UTSA. That UAB has the better defense, UTSA has the better offense, at least going into the season, and we'll see which one kind of matters more, or which of those other units steps up.
Mm-hmm.
Does the UAB offense really step up? Does the UTSA defense really step up? I think we see those two teams play in the conference championship game.
Do you think this season for them could be a little bit more of a mind game? Because, like we mentioned with Javi, their first three games, you've got Houston, Army, and Texas. What if they go 0-3? Then you get Texas Southern, which is probably a win. But what if you go? What if you go? It better be, yes. So what if you go into conference play 1-3 at that point?
I think that's,
you know,
a great way to put it. I do think it's mental, because last year they started 11-0.
Yep.
And everybody in the city, everybody on campus, all of their family, all their friends, right, patting them on the back, telling them how great they are. They were the best football team in UTSA history. I know that's not a long history, so take that with a grain of salt. But everybody's telling you are the best to ever play here. Like, y'all are great. You win a conference championship. You get ranked, all that kind of stuff. That same group of guys, or at least pretty close to that same group of guys, may be looking at 0-3 this year. And you're not going to get as much praise, right? Your friends, your parents, your girlfriends, they're not your social media. There's going to be some negativity.
You're going to have to step up in other ways.
How do you handle that?
Right.
How do you handle that? And so I think that's why Jeff Traylor's adopted this bull don't care saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for those who don't know, Jeff Traylor-isms are, you know, they're like Ted Lasso, right? Like, he's just a guy who can, like, come up with a phrase. And the one for this year is bull don't care, because the bull doesn't care if you're the rodeo champion or if you're the worst bull rider of all time. He just wants you off his back. Right. And that's what UTSA is going to have to deal with this year, is being this program that now has expectations, having an out of conference schedule that's going to be really hard. How do those two things meld, and how do you stick together? And I think that's why Traylor has to rely on his high school roots and think of it as non-district and district.
Yeah.
And we've seen teams go and win state championships with 0-4, 0-5 district records. Mm-hmm. Right. It does not matter. It all gets thrown out. UTSA isn't playing for a college football playoff spot. Okay, yep. The record does not matter. What matters is your conference. And if they go 0-3 to start the year but win Conference USA, that's a better season than if they go 1-2, 2-1, and then don't win Conference USA.
Right.
So this is all about the conference this year, all about winning Conference USA, and all about setting yourself up to move to the American.
Mm-hmm. And let's close it out with that. Speaking of, what can UTSA be in the American Athletic Conference? And I think the first game of the season is going to be a big indicator of how they're going to be able to compete with, and even though Houston will be moving to the Big 12, that's still a Conference USA
versus American,
right. setup right then.
Yeah, I think it's a good litmus test for UTSA to kind of see what the differences are.
Can they hang
are.
With
right.
the top of
Not
the
only just
American.
The players, but the coaching staff, right, to really, like, see up close, okay, here's where we're at, here's where we need to be. You know, I think UTSA had really risen to the top of Conference USA in terms of spending,
mm-hmm.
right? Traylor gets that $2.8 million 10-year extension. The facilities, as Javi mentioned, are incredible now. Like, when I was covering UTSA, they were doing everything out of, like, a portable trailer,
right?
Like, that you drove off campus to go do, like, an interview or whatever. Like, now it's all there at the race facility. They're gonna have to step it up even more for the American, right?
Yep,
they're about mid-table spending wise at the American. It's hard to expect money wins,
yep,
in college football. Right. It just does. And so until they kind of get to the top of spending in the American, I see them as a middle of the table team. Coaching is going to be a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Jeff Traylor is a tremendous coach, so that kind of helps. But it's going to be an adjustment period. I don't expect them to walk into the American and just dominate the way that they mm-hmm. are currently in Conference USA. It's going to be an adjustment specifically after they lose this group of players. When Frank Harris is gone, when Sakari Franklin's gone, when Rashad Wisdom is gone, who steps up and becomes the UTSA football program after that in
For
the
sure.
American? We're going to have to find that out, and that's going to be, to me, the most fascinating thing to watch UTSA over the next couple years is who are those next leaders? Because Frank Wilson, who got fired rightfully, doesn't get the credit he deserves for getting these guys on campus.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all the guys we're mentioning were there when Jeff Traylor got there.
Yeah.
Right? So we're going to have to see Jeff Traylor win with his own players in the American. That's going to be as much of an adjustment as moving up.
Yeah, for sure.
All righty. That will do it. I think we lived through this one.
I think we did too.
I was nervous.
You know what? I think we did.
I was nervous.
I think we did pretty good.
I'm not
we
a natural
51
host.
Minutes.
I'm not a natural host. I want Ish back as soon as possible.
You want to produce too?
I thought about pranking him and asking him, like, "Hey, man, I'm super nervous. Can you just call in? Can you just
well,
call
like
in?"
Like we did last time, we made him host over the phone.
Can you just call in for 25, 30 minutes and just, like, get us through the first section or whatever until I find my footing? But I think we survived. Thank you for listening to another episode of Republic of Football. I know this is normally when he tells you how many episodes we've done.
This is 207. I guess I'm the
207. Okay, 207.
That, so,
for me, this is just episode 2. I think we should start over.
I think so too. I think we should too.
Episode 2 in the books. We appreciate you listening again.
Yes.
Go check us out on Spotify, YouTube,
Live
iTunes.
Every Wednesday at 2 p.m.
Every Wednesday at 2 p.m. we'll be here. Those ratings really help us. We have interviewed 11 of the 12 FBS head coaches in the state. Jimbo Fisher. Call
Come
me back, bro.
Podcast.
Peace.